The board has reconvened. It's 10:37 a.m. on Tuesday, December 17th, 2024, at the Board of Physical Therapy regular session meeting. We'll do a roll call of board members and staff to ensure all have returned after the break. Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius, and I see that we are also joined by Mark Harris, Assistant Attorney General. Dr. King, Dr. Bustillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, we are on agenda item 9B, case 2416, Alvin Rogers, PT.
Good morning, members of the board. This is case 2416, which you opened after you reviewed and adjudicated case 2401, Stephanie Ivey, PTA. Dr. Rogers served as Ms. Ivey's supervising physical therapist, and he was also the clinical director of the therapy department at the time. Dr. Rogers did receive a copy of the investigative report, and after review, he stated he did not have any changes that he wished to make to the report. In my investigative report, I did identify several mitigating factors that you may wish to consider as you make a decision about this case. You had identified the following possible statute violations: ARS 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules, and as it relates to R-424-303-B2, on each date of service, the physical therapist shall determine based on the patient's acuity and treatment plan whether it's appropriate to use assistive personnel to perform a selective treatment intervention or physical therapy task for the patient. This matters for your review. And Dr. Rogers is on, he is in the meeting.
Great. Thank you. Dr. Rogers, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
I am.
Great. Does anyone have any questions?
I have a comment, and maybe it leads into a question. Mm-hmm. The response from Dr. Rogers in terms of his review of everything that's happened, it seems like it was in days that you initiated a bunch of changes. So, Mr. Rogers, if you can tell us a little bit about those changes that you made based off of this coming forward.
Sure. This obviously what has been a very challenging situation. I think you've seen many people on the board here and investigated people, and it's a motivating thing. And for me, I'm personally motivated. I try to get things done in a timely manner. And when I identify an issue or something's been identified, I try to take action immediately. But all the actions that I've taken have not been just initially. I have a list that I provided you guys. I think about 23 different actions that I've taken, but some as really related directly to supervision have been substantial. We've made changes to the way that we track our supervision, how we plan for 4 to 6 weeks of supervision. This has probably been one of the biggest changes that has influenced our practice, is planning for supervision, not hoping that it comes together, not having someone lined up and it just happens to be that we have that in line. But actually, we do have a scheduler that is a therapist that has now a lead role in that, to monitor the whiteboard, which is now really turned into our scheduler, where each assistant has a documented therapist that's supposed to supervise them for that day so that they can see that in advance. So that's probably one of the biggest changes. I would like to address, you know, at the last meeting, it was brought up that this was a facility issue. I mean, obviously, it's a me issue as a director and as a therapist. It's a safety issue for patient care. But I wanted to make sure you guys knew that I took this very, very seriously. And that's why there was no hesitation in trying to make the changes. And if you read my letter, you'll recognize that this facility has grown significantly in the course of the last 4 to 5 years. We have, you know, we had a small group of therapists, just me and two assistants, one to begin with. And then out of COVID, it just sort of blossomed and boomed. And I really think that I took on more than I could handle in the best interest of trying to take care of as many patients as possible. We are a not-for-profit hospital, a critical access hospital in a rural area, and it's not about a financial, like, motivation here. This has always been, for me and for the clinic, a means to help people, and I don't think I could do as much as I wanted to do safely, and I think the patients needed more supervision than they got, and so I recognize this, and that's why I made changes. So thank you.
Dr. Rogers, this is Mr. Greer. I appreciate your letter. I appreciate what you said. I hate that it takes an investigation to get those kind of changes, but I'm certainly grateful that you made them and you are taking it seriously. You're saying exactly what we want to hear from someone in your seat. So I appreciate that.
In the last 7 months, or sorry, in the last 10 months, we have had 7 travelers join our team, coming and going. This has been a huge challenge for me because of the gaps that it creates in care, in supervision. And I feel like now, because of this investigation, I wish it had happened sooner. I didn't really have the solutions, and I hadn't networked with my team to create solutions, even though that's what we do on the regular. We meet regularly. We have staff meetings, and we've always made it a priority to make changes. We are self-starters. But the solutions that I've documented in here for travelers, which has created a significant amount of stress, has been reduced. With the schedule of having supervision outlined, has also come this preemptive planning to have travelers lined up where there is expected gaps. It takes months to try to get someone ready to go as far as set up for a contract. And if you wait till 3 weeks before, that was the practice, was like sort of just trying to make it happen last minute. It wasn't working. And so now I've already planned to have travelers where we have gaps all the way through May. This is something that we have to do, and it's something that we've been successful with all of these onboardings of these travelers. We are now prepared to give them the tools that they need to understand how our clinic runs based on the Arizona statutes in a rural area. And we've applied those things, I think, robustly and consistently. And I would like to thank Mindy for, I mean, before I was being investigated, she told me that this was not on par with what we needed to do. And it was really from that moment that acceleration happened to get this resolved and to make changes that were needed.
Dr. Rogers, how many PTs work in your facility now?
5.
And is it just clinic-based, or is home health as well, correct?
No, we do not do any home health services.
Okay, so just clinic. And how many PTAs are working for you?
Between 5 or 6. Okay. Right now, 6.
How about aides and techs and things like that?
We have 2 technicians. They do not do any direct care. And since we've been onboarding a new EMR system, they really haven't even been out on the floor. They've been really assisting with data input and stuff like that to help switch those EMRs. So it's not our facility practice to use techs or any patient care besides cleaning.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Rogers, with all of the changes that you've implemented, can you kind of paint a picture for us? What does it look like from the moment a PT or a PTA walks into the clinic and wants to know how their day is going to go? You know, who is my supervisor? What patients am I seeing? a PT potentially looking over those patients to, you know, make sure that they're appropriate for the PTA. Can you kind of walk us through that process?
Absolutely. And this will highlight a couple other changes that have happened as well. Being a hospital-based outpatient center and having acute care, a swing bed unit to take care of, that really has made it difficult over the years to be in multiple places. You're always sort of flexing one way or the other. But since we've made these changes, the hospital is really a self-sufficient unit now. It's not having this, you know, sort of divided care where someone has to run over there, run back, run over there, come back. It's two therapists going over there together and taking care of the services. So they know exactly who their patients are. That's really important to our success, because that was a really leading factor where you just couldn't be, you know, yes, you're on site, but you couldn't have those quick conversations for patients to make sure you could establish acuity so that you could direct the interventions. So when a PT and PTA walks in, they know where they're going to be, and they've already known for weeks who they're going to supervise in advance. So that's really the daily behavior, and they see that directly on our schedule. We use the WebPT software for outpatient. At the very top of that, it has everyone documented who they're actually going to be supervised or supervised by, so they know who their patients. Additionally, in WebPT, and I guess this is the concern I believe that Dr. King brought up when the investigation was started, was that Alvin was supervising patients that he didn't know. Because we had so much transition from one traveler to the next, it was not the practice of our front office to change the lead therapist or the primary therapist in our EMR to the therapist that was coming on. That was quite the burden for the staff at the time, and I had brought it up multiple times that this needed to happen, but it just wasn't. And so now, without fail, this is documented in the case that the primary therapist is the person that evaluated the person. If it is a PT that's coming on to accept the patient as theirs, there is a better handoff now, if possible, or at least a written statement for each patient that the new PT that's coming on board can review. Additionally, one step further, it's not always easy to access who the primary therapist is without going into the case. So we took it a step further on the schedule. The PT and the PTA, whoever's working on that case, are documented in the notes, which if you highlight over the patient, you can see who they're supposed to be scheduled with. And so this is something that's made a big difference when it comes to keeping care consistent between two providers at the most and the maximum three, which is one of the rules that we've created in the clinic. So
great.
That's the day to day.
Okay. Awesome.
And just for full clarity, you're no longer treating patients, is that correct? And you're the one that's really primarily overseeing that all of these changes that you've implemented are continuing to occur.
Yes, that's correct. I do still, like the other day, we had six evaluations in the hospital. And so obviously it was a lot for a Monday morning for our lead PT over there. So I went to the surgery center and handled two of the total knee replacements that were coming out. So, and that's excellent. I like to keep my hands, you know, in the treatment, because it keeps you passionate about why you got into this. But I am realizing, and with the support of my administration, it has truly been excellent. He has seen that I cannot do all the patient care. I can't be the solution. I have to be sort of the mentor, the director, the educator. And I am filling those roles much better than I ever have before. And I feel like we are in a better place than we were when this started. And yes, I agree. It's not fun that it took an investigation to make these changes, but we have taken full advantage of this opportunity to improve our practice, because that's what we care about here, is the best care. We might be the only one in La Paz County to give care, but we want it to be the best care. So that's what we're passionate about.
Well, it does sound like you've made some wonderful changes, and I applaud you for your efforts in that. Any other questions? Any thoughts?
This is Mr. Greer. I think this is a case is appropriate for an advisory letter. I'm very pleased with the changes that have been made. And I would move that we issue an advisory letter, letter of concern, indicating that the Dr. Rogers should be mindful of his obligations to supervise assistive personnel.
Second.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. You know, I feel like I've been railing against companies that don't do this the right way for a long time, and it's good to see somebody come in who actually is trying to fix it. And from what I see, you know, a lot of good things. So.
Yeah. I agree. I think memorializing within the contract letter is perfect.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
In case number 2416, Alvin Rogers PT, it's been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter reminding Mr. Rogers of his duties in accordance with the laws and rules regarding supervision of PTAs and other assistive staff. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you for all your efforts, Dr. Rogers, in this matter.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so then we'll move on to case number 2422, Andrea Learman, PT.
Yes, hello.
Okay.
Dr. Andrea Learman, PT, was charged with a DUI on July 28, 2024, but did not notify the board within the 10 working day regulatory requirement. She was charged with an extreme DUI with a BAC of 0.154. Dr. Learman also renewed her Arizona PT license on August 20th, 2024 without disclosing the DUI charges. The potential violations identified in the investigative report include ARS 32-3208, criminal charges, mandatory reporting requirements, civil penalty exceptions A, a health professional who has been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety, or a felony after receiving or renewing a license or certificate, must notify the health professional's regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed. And as it relates to R-424-312 mandatory reporting requirement, A, as required by ARS 32-3208, an applicant licensee or certificate holder who is charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony shall provide written notice of the charge to the board within 10 working days after the charge is filed. And ARS 32-2044-3, obtaining or attempting to obtain a license or certificate by fraud or misrepresentation. Her most recent court appearance was yesterday, December 16th, 2024. And I do believe she is willing to provide an update of that court appearance that was yesterday. This matter is for your review.
Great. Thank you. Dr. Learman, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Great. Can you begin by telling us what happened at court yesterday?
Yes, of course. Judge Padilla had offered a 0.08 DUI plea, and so I went yesterday for my actual trial to accept the 0.08 DUI plea. And then I have a stack of papers that I will get on a PDF file to Liz, who I've been working with. My lawyer does not have them on a PDF, where I wanted to provide those for you guys today. But it basically, I paid $1,671 for the fine. I will serve 6 hours of community service before February 14th. I will do drug and alcohol counseling that need to be completed by March 31st
2025. I do not know how many hours of drug and alcohol counseling until the therapist is going to evaluate me and then tell me how many hours, and then I will serve those out or do those hours with her, with that therapist. And then because it's a point, it's charged as a .08 DUI, the interlock device was not part of my sentencing from the Prescott judge in Arizona, but the state of Arizona has some of the hardest laws against DUIs. And so regardless, everybody has to have an interlock. And there's a separate judge at the Motor Vehicle Department, ADOT, that I have to speak with and go forward with getting the interlock. And right now he is allowing me to drive, knowing that I've been compliant with everything that's been asked of me. I don't have any previous criminal records. And so I am driving legally currently right now, and then I plan to go to the DMV as soon as possible to get the interlock installed.
Are you currently working?
Yes.
Okay. And are you seeking help outside of what's been court ordered?
Absolutely. I'm very remorseful. I'm trying to hold myself together to not cry. I'm very embarrassed. So I had shared with Liz a few different letters, a letter of explanation, an extended letter of explanation. I included three character letters from coworkers and peers. And then I also included, I've done a 14 or 15 therapy sessions with a psychotherapist that specializes in EMDR for trauma. And I included those receipts.
I know that it seemed like you were advised to not report.
Correct.
Your charges. I guess that the one that concerns me the most is on your renewal, your licensure renewal.
Okay.
That it wasn't reported. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. What happened is I work at a small private practice in Chino Valley, Arizona. And this last got audited by Medicare, and they just, you know, were kind of nervous about this and that, and everything was good, but they're just trying to stay ahead of the game. And so they just asked us, like, we all kind of did it together that day on the computer, and I have a really bad feeling in my stomach because essentially what I could have done is just not renewed it and then just had to pay, right, like late fees and things like that after I had this meeting with you guys. And so I didn't know what to do. And then again, my lawyer had said, well, you haven't had your pretrial conference. You know, nothing's essentially been passed through the system. And so I was going off of counsel from my lawyer again.
Yeah, and you've since learned that we have our own statutes that need to be followed.
Yeah.
She's muted. Dr. Learman, I know you noted in the stuff that you submitted to the board that you've had some things that have been going on personally with you How do you feel like you're, and you don't have to go into detail about what any of those things are, but how do you feel like you are managing those things now with the help that you are getting at this point? Do you feel like any of what's going on is affecting your patient care at all? If you can just kind of go into that a little bit.
Sure. Sorry. Fortunately, I love this profession. Fortunately, I'm, you know, somewhat skilled at it at this point after practicing for 15 years. And so really it's been an escape for me. Kind of workaholic type mentality. I have an LLC that I also see patients on the side, and I also am a yoga teacher. So to answer that question, I think that fortunately I was very functional during this time with my work. And I was very dysfunctional in my personal life. And now that I'm seeing a therapist, because I was seeing a life coach after the miscarriage and after the breakup and then turning 40 and all the things that kind of, you know, it's an excuse, but kind of the unfortunate events that led to this. And the event that happened that night with the now ex-boyfriend. I thought I was doing a good job because I was working hard and then working on the side and then teaching yoga. And I was basically in denial, and I thought I was kind of giving it a college try, and, you know, had a couple good friends that I talked to and a life coach and, you know, working out. You know, trying to eat healthy and everything, but, you know, meanwhile, I was just stuffing everything under the rug. And so I am addressing, I think I've gone to the psychotherapist 14 sessions now, and I do feel that it's really helping me personally.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions or thoughts on the case?
If I could just say a statement, I appreciate you guys and what you do. And again, I never thought I'd be sitting in this position. I do plan on, you know, continuing to make positive changes in my life, abstaining from alcohol. I have never partaken in any other recreational drugs. I've never had a drink at work. I've never been impaired treating a client, a patient. Throughout my 15 years, I've done, I think, 6 years of home health. I never, you know, never once did I ever have alcohol in me when I was working. Definitely it was a really unfortunate event outside of work hours.
Any thoughts on a motion?
I would move to send an advisory letter just stating what the statute is on reporting period.
I'll second that, Giovanni. I feel like she's doing everything that she can be doing. She sought help outside of court-mandated objectives that still need to be met, and she's working on getting her life back to where it's going to be much healthier for her. So I think that's a good way to memorialize the event.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I would also just really encourage her to share with her colleagues the experience that if you're not sure whether you should report something or do something based on your license and statute, call the board. Don't ask your attorney necessarily. You own your license. He doesn't. And so no matter what the boss says, no matter what management says, no matter what your attorney says, check with the board.
Okay, absolutely.
Share that with everyone because we can't lean on our own understanding of it all. You have to own your license and you've got to know what the statutes say.
Great advice.
Yeah. And I know that recently we've come down harder on people who are in this situation. And frankly, I'm not usually very sympathetic to the excuses of why people didn't report these type of events. But I do think, you know, relying on counsel certainly seems reasonable. It certainly should have been reasonable. So I'm probably much more sympathetic to this one than I would be to others.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready.
In case 2422, Andrea Learman, PT, it's been moved and seconded to issue an advisory letter reminding her of her reporting responsibilities in accordance with ARS 323208. Dr. Bastia.
Yes.
Dr. Kane.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Best of luck to you, Dr. Learman. I hope everything goes well for you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
Okay, we will be moving on to preliminary reviews here, and our first one is NK.
Yeah, before I get started, so the next seven cases, they're all mine, and these are all preliminary reviews. So just as a reminder, the decisions for the board is just either to take no action or to open a case. And if you vote to open a case, I have identified in each of the matters potential violations that you may wish to consider. So the first case is, and because it is a preliminary review, as practice, we have identified both the complainant, if there is one, and the respondent or licensee as by their initials. So the first one is NK, and NK is present as well as the person who filed the complaint, which was her patient, LM. LM filed a complaint alleging that the male person that was assisting NK during the treatment on October 4th of 2024 inappropriately touched her when she began to lose her balance. And she was the primary therapist treating the patient, and she took action to prevent the patient from falling by requesting the assistance from this male staff member who happened to be a physical therapist. The patient was not wearing a gait belt. The male PT was able to assist the patient to regain her balance by what appeared to be placing his hand on the patient's body in the area of her posterior waist. It also appeared from what has been submitted so far that given the urgency with which NK requested assistance from the male PT, the consent for him to touch the patient could not be obtained. In addition to the allegation, as I looked at the medical record, I'm going to ask the board to consider also the deficiencies identified in clinical record keeping. While there is some discrepancy as to why the patient was not wearing a gait belt, there was no documentation in the clinical record that she refused it, nor that, given her high risk for falls, she was informed of the risk of refusing the gait belt during standing balance activities. NK had performed an initial evaluation on September 25th of 24 and documented a berg balance assessment at a level 12, which is a high risk for falls. The patient had a history of falls, and she was using a walker for all standing ADLs. This was also the first attempt of the patient engaging in these high-level balance activities. When I talked to the patient, she stated that she was never offered a gait belt. In addition, during the medical record review, there were documentation deficiencies identified, and it was a limited medical record review, but there were no objective evaluation of range of motion and strength, sensory assessment, and even gait analysis was remiss in being documented. This matters for your review.
Great. Thank you. So we still can ask questions of the patient and the PT.
The patient wished not to participate in today's.
Yep, perfect. Matter, okay.
But NK is willing to make a statement and answer questions.
Great. Thank you. NK, please feel free to make a statement.
Hi. Should I keep the video on too? Okay. Hi, this is me. Thanks for having me speak. I understand during the day of evaluation of my patient, her sensitivity, as well as she was kind of overwhelmed with everything. And I try to stay throughout with all my patients. It is hard to document sometimes on the day of eval because she was highly emotional. I try to hold her hand throughout every single, you can ask the patient as well. Every single session I had been with the patient from the beginning till the end. The day this happened, the patient usually used a stroller to walk and as a balance, which was talk to the doctor if she could get a walker, proper walker to walk as well. But she used a stroller all this time. But on the day this happened, she walked in. She was very happy with the progress that she was making. She said there is no dizziness. She left the stroller in the front, walked all the way to the bike, arm bike, and started to perform the movement. She was not dizzy. Nothing happened. When I asked, is she okay? Because the previous session, we had tried just 4 minutes of standing in the parallel bar, and that was with the gait belt. And she had done it. And just because she is a little emotional, I try to stay with her all the time. Even on that day, I was with her. Although when I asked her, do you need a gait belt? I lifted it up. She said she nodded her head. So I left it. It was in the parallel bar because I know about my patient. I tried to take her to the parallel bar. The gait belt was there. I was behind her throughout the time. But when asked to turn her head, she was trying to lose balance because she was trying to lift her finger off the parallel bar. So noticing there is a balance issue, I called the help. Usually it is a female, the front aide, who usually comes and helps me. And that day she was finishing up helping with the daily visits of someone in the front scheduling their appointment. So I happen to have the PT who has been with there. He is a traveling therapist. Like he's there at least like twice a week in our facility, but he moves between clinics. He was called right then and he came in and he stood behind her. I didn't see her face flinch or anything like that. And once the exercises were done, we took her to the table and she said she was uncomfortable. So knowing my patient, I asked if she is feeling dizzy or if in case a male therapist is making her feel uncomfortable. And I said going forward, even without her answering, I said, going forward, he will not be there. Do not worry, because I had to ask for a help because I cannot hold you from the front because I was in the front telling her how to move her head. So I couldn't do anything because I have to keep the safety as my priority. She did say, I didn't even fall. That was her statement. I'm not even falling. I'm stable. But he was there behind her. And then I said, like, going forward, it will not happen. She was comfortable. We finished the session. But after I started taking my another patient, my front office came back and she pulled me out saying she has concerns. So that is when she talked about it. And I said he's having an evaluation, but I'll go talk to him right then. So I pulled my other therapist, address whatever the patient had said, and he said he had not even touched her, but had her hand up on her not even there, just there, up on her back. So this is what had happened.
Okay, so are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
In regards to the patient's dizziness handicap inventory, 62%, there's subcomponents of it that's physical, emotional, and functional. And you mentioned the emotional part. What was her subcomponents of her dizziness handicap inventory? Was her emotional score high?
I think, yes, sir, but I can always provide it. It is not in front of me. I can always provide it. She was in tears the day of eval. I had witnesses because like I was next to her handing over tissues and she felt safe and protected. She said she did hold on to my hand every single session and say, I'm happy that I am here. So for me, the trust is more important. So that is one among the reason, even without her asking me or saying anything, I went ahead asking her, is she feeling comfortable? And went ahead saying, because I knew I didn't, because it was time constrained, what if she falls down? I cannot wait for that to happen. So I said, from going forward, there will be only the front aid who always is there next to us and not this male person. So I can provide the score if needed.
So when you look at her diagnoses, we have vision, vestibular, and somatosensation. She has a vestibular problem. She has a visual problem. And mm-hmm. she has a loss of sensation in her feet in terms of somatosensation.
Yes.
Because she's pre-diabetic.
But
so when you have all three strikes against you, and you in terms of your documentation, what I see is that you did everything else seated. And as far as I know, this looks like the first time that you had her standing up in the parallel bars. Is that correct?
Sir, she was there on October 1st as well. And that time we did do the parallel bar with the gait belt and that is documented. I can provide that information to you. Just because she was very confident walking on October 4th. So I did lift the gait belt, assuming like it's not even assuming. I lifted the gait belt and showed it around my waist. So she nodded her head and she walked directly to the parallel bars. And we had the front office person saying, hey, you are doing a very good job, because I did hear her saying that too. Mm-hmm. So my eyes are there. Any patient you ask if it is a vestibular or like a geriatric patient, the first thing I do is gait belt. I'm always with the patient from the start to end. If they don't have a gait belt and if they need something, sometimes we provide the gait belt from ours and make them bring it back for safety reasons. We don't want them have a fall, even outside. And she is walking perfectly fine when she walks, but she doesn't use a proper walker. She uses a stroller, the baby stroller, when she walks.
In this episode, she didn't have a gait belt, though, correct?
But it was asked for her. Like, once she sat, she walked directly to the bike. And then when I asked her, can I get you the belt? She nodded her head. And with the conversation I had with the other therapist, because he came in, he lifted the gait belt, she moved his hand. And he was just there behind her, holding his hand up like that. Because he had seen me work with this patient before and seeing her more emotional.
Sure, but it is your decision to decide if she needs a gait belt or not.
Yes, sir. I agree. That is the reason I lifted it. I told her we are going to get. She nodded. And then I was next to her. It is not that I made her walk all by herself. I did hold her hand and walk to the parallel bars. And she was holding on to the parallel bars. I was all the time there behind her. But just because she was not turning her head, I had to move in the front to show her. And she was still holding on to the parallel bar. But once she lifted her one hand up, I was noticing a slight sway, and that is why I didn't want an episode to happen. So I called for help to step for someone to be behind her.
Thank you.
I don't hear you, ma'am.
That's because I was muted. Oh, the dog's barking. Okay. Okay. I see two issues here. One is the complaint where the patient felt she was inappropriately touched when a PT was trying to prevent her from falling. And I actually, there's no way to gain consent for that. So for me, that seems to be a bit of a moot point. Like, it's implied consent. I'm assuming that someone will help you not fall. And in doing so, they may touch you in places that they didn't intend to. The second issue, though, is around your documentation, right, and evaluation and patient care. And so for me, in that one, we do have her statement saying she was not offered a gait belt. And so there's a conflicting information there on that second piece. And we weren't there, so we don't know. But we do know that she did lose her balance, and we don't have good evaluation data to support her standing activities and her gait. And so I think for me, that's where the investigative report leads me to think that, you know, there may be some opportunity for you around education to really take a look at how you're evaluating, how you're documenting, how you're progressing your patients.
Yes, ma'am. Like, I'm very careful, especially on the day of eval, she was very emotional. So there was very hardly much to be done. But just because the patient was able to walk, and then she uses a stroller to walk, and she did report feeling less dizziness, which is there. And on October 1st, when she came in, she did report she had her intensity of dizziness have been less, and she did not have any dizziness while she was walking or doing the exercises in the clinic. And even that day, she did a little bit, like 4 minutes, that was the max that she was there. That is the time when she was there in the parallel bar with the gait belt doing her walking. She did tandem walks, and then all that she did was done. Towards the end of the session, she did do it. She did not lose balance, and she was fine. But the thing with the with regard to the progressing the patient, just because she tolerated seated, and I know she needed a lot of motivation, and the day she came and she was happy with the progress that she has been having. She did say, like, oh, I wish I had found you long time before. These were emotional. I know patients do get emotional by all means, but I have to give them more the emotional and make sure, you know, I progress them. That is my key. I always progress.
Right. I think the piece that you're missing, though, is that that's not documented, right? So those key pieces that you're talking about in your experience with your patient, we can't read that in a chart. We don't know that you did the exact, like, the correct evaluation processes to make sure that this patient was ready for your next steps. You didn't have a baseline to say this is where we're going to progress to. And so I'm not questioning whether or not you're doing great therapy with your patients, but I can't validate that because it's not in your documentation.
I agree to that, ma'am. But she walked without her stroller, which she usually does. So
I would have been terrified about that. I would have said, stop.
Yes.
Right? Don't come any further. Let me get you a chair. Because I haven't evaluated that yet. She falls and
that is on me. Yes, I get
it. Totally on you.
She left the stroller and she walked all by herself. Then I was behind her. Even my front office person was behind her till she walked up to the bike. She walked very slowly, but she was there. But I did ask her consent, like, hey, how comfortable she was. And then she was like, I did not feel any dizzy. My intensity is very less. I'm able to walk much better. Just because I did that last session of a tandem balance in the parallel bars, I said, okay, let me start you with that. Let's see how you feel. That is what
I did. So just to kind of reiterate what Dr. King was saying, all that's wonderful and that's good therapy, but there's nothing that tells us that, you know, you don't tell us she's ready for the next step. You don't tell us what level of assistance you're giving her. Is it only standby assist? Is it contact guard assist? Is it minimal assist? We don't know.
I see that as a flaw I have there. Yes, in that.
And then your assessment should be, you know, we're going to be progressing to standing. We're going to be, progressing to dynamic balance activity because patient has met, you know, whatever goals. You know, that's a very important part of progression in documentation.
Yes, ma'am. I agree.
I think also the idea that, you know, she's walking in using a stroller as a walker. I don't see anything within the evaluation. I know you mentioned that you had referred, you know, or told the doctor that, you know, she should be using a regular walker at that point, but it's not documented within the initial evaluation. You know, the fact that you offered a gait belt or, you know, there's nothing in there about educating the patient on why you want to use a gait belt or that she even declined the gait belt. You know, these are all things that, you know, as Dr. King and Dr. Bustillo are both mentioning, you want to make sure are in that documentation,
to ensure
people understand it.
So I have a question for Mr. Harris. Are we able to do an NDO with a preliminary or do we need to open a case?
You do need to open up a case, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think with the questioning the way that it's going, I would like to open a complaint regarding this case and then ask for three additional chart reviews as well.
Okay. And I would just ask the board that you would like me to cite 32-2044 engaging in the performance of substandard care and 32-2044-20 failing to maintain adequate records in the notice.
Yes, please.
I think you need a second, right?
Yes.
Second.
Any further discussion? I feel that there's just a lot of unanswered questions, and I feel like if we're going to move to a reasonable conclusion with some remediation, that we do need to open a case. I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to open a case against NK, citing the potential violations of ARS 32-2044, engaging in performance of substandard care by a physical therapist, and ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and request an additional request at least three additional records be reviewed. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. The board will be in touch. And then we will move on to review of TM.
This is matter 9E, and I believe that TM is on the meeting. On July 4th, 2021, TM was arrested for disorderly conduct domestic violence. He pled guilty in September of 21 and received court-ordered sentencing, which included domestic violence assessment. He paid restitution and attended DV classes, 26 classes. He states that he satisfied all the conditions of his plea agreement, but he did not report his arrest and charges within the 10-day regulatory requirement. That was the first issue. He did report this arrest on his license renewal for the 2024 period, answering yes to question one, and then he provided a narrative response and he attached multiple documents. However, on his 2022 renewal, which was the next renewal period after his sentencing, he had answered no to those questions. He did provide a written statement and additional supporting documents for your consideration. When I asked him, he stated he wasn't aware that he had falsely answered no to the questions on his 2022 renewal application. He believed that because the department, DPS had suspended his fingerprint clearance card, he believed that they would have notified the board about his arrest. One of the mitigating factors that you may wish to consider is that he states that he did not practice for the 6 months that his fingerprint clearance card was suspended. So the issue is that he didn't report within the 10 days, and then he didn't answer correctly or accurately on the next renewal period, which would have been the 2022 renewal, but he did answer correctly on the 2024 renewal. So this matters for your review, and TN is available for questions if you have them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for TM? So what are your thoughts then about opening a case or taking no action?
It's Dr. King. I think I would prefer to open a case and then potentially, I think we have to open a case to even send an advisory letter. Is that right, Mr. Harris?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of opening a case with the eventual action of, we'll start there. I move that we open a case.
I think in the past, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Harris, if the board has, there's consensus about an advisory letter, can we initiate that process right after opening the case? Or does it need to come back?
I think the best practice would be for it to come back.
Come back, okay.
Yeah.
I'll second that if nobody else did. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
And does that case include all of the violations that were cited in the report, 32,
mm-hmm.
3208 and
32-2044-3?
Okay.
For me, 32-208 for sure. The next one's kind of hard because he did report and he didn't report, so he did, you know what I mean? But, I mean, you can put them both in. The advisory letter will address both if that's what we decide to do as a board.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to open a case against TM citing potential violations of ARS 32-3208 and ARS 32-2044-3. Dr. Vistia?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
He had to drop off, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think we marked him as dropped off at 11:31. I just wanted to make sure that. So he'll be marked absent in this vote. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. The board will be in touch, TM.
Real quick, moving forward, am I able to practice or do mm-hmm. I not? Mm-hmm. I am able to practice.
Yes, you're able to practice. The investigator will reach out to you with any next steps.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Ready for 9F?
Yeah, we are. We're on 9F, JK.
Yep, and I don't believe he is present. JK self-reported on his 2024 renewal a pending medical malpractice case involving an injury to a patient under his care. He answered yes to the question 1.5, have you had a malpractice judgment against you or do you have a lawsuit currently pending for malpractice? And he included a letter from an attorney that reflected that a case was being filed against him. So I requested the medical record. The patient injury occurred on August 28th of 2023 when the patient was performing high-level balance activities. The patient tripped and fell on an outstretched hand, resulting in wrist pain. JK examined the patient's wrist, provided ice, and advised her to go to the emergency room for an x-ray and follow-up care. The patient did, it was confirmed that the patient had sustained a wrist fracture as a result of the fall. JK did provide a written response and supporting documents that were provided as exhibits 2 through 2B. It appears that he took appropriate action after the patient fell. However, in review of the medical record, and JK's response, it's unclear why he was actually continuing to perform these high-level balance activities, because he had discontinued all of the goals that were related to the treatment of her lumbar spine as of June 30th of 2024. He confirms that he had not, 2023, sorry. JK confirms that he had not completed an objective balance assessment for this patient at any time, including before he progressed her leg strengthening and balance exercises on the day of the patient's fall. It's also noted on the description of the procedures performed that day that therapeutic exercise and therapeutic activity were documented as, quote, unsupervised, end quote. I didn't pursue any further. Again, these are limited medical record reviews and interviews, so I didn't pursue any additional information on that. So he was aware that this was going to be placed on the today's meeting as a preliminary review. So I don't see him present. JK, are you present in today's proceeding? So this matters for your review.
I feel like he did report. However, there are some documentation problems, and that would be the only reason that I feel like we would open a complaint. But how does everyone else feel?
When I look at page 10, the plan of care does include balance. And let's see, what else does it say? Balance training, proprioceptive, and kinesthetic awareness. He didn't assess that, but I don't know if maybe that's what he was going after in terms of this episode, this unfortunate episode. So I think he did respond appropriately in terms of, I agree, in terms of the response from the patient falling. And it does look like it's in the plan of care, but he didn't assess it. So that's what I see.
What do you think, Dr. King?
I'm kind of leaning to take no action. Because he did report. Is that the question? The question is that he didn't report?
Well, it came across, he reported. So anytime from a medical malpractice, we get these, we go into and we look at the record. It's a limited review. And we look for anything that might be potentially, of interest to you as it relates to the clinical practice standards of care. So I do a limited medical record review. And while he took appropriate action following the injury,
yeah,
the medical record left something to be desired in terms of documentation and assessment.
Can we table this and ask him to and have an opportunity to actually speak to him before we take action or not? I mean, yeah. I'm just curious, since then, what has he done, and has he taken CEUs, and is he working on his document? The questions we typically ask when someone's in front of us trying to determine what to do next.
You certainly have the ability to continue this if you'd like.
Or would it be a better idea to just open a complaint and then have him come before us, and then we can dismiss? Whichever way. I just would like to like to have a conversation with the licensees when I can.
He seems amenable to, anytime I asked him for information, he was amenable to providing it. So I think he would be amenable to coming back. So whether or not we do it as a continuance of a preliminary review or you go ahead and open a case, it'll delay it a little bit, opening a case, because then he has 30 days to respond. If you continue it as a preliminary review, we could get him next month and, perhaps answer your questions in a more expeditious manner. You may end up in the same, you may end up in the same place opening a case after that discussion anyway, but.
Right. Madam President, do you have a preference?
I don't, you know, it's so hard. I mean, how many people out there in practice document adequately? I feel like he handled the situation that he reported on very well.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that sort of sounds like
so I struggle with no this action. Because, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I could go that way too. Dr. Hike, what are your thoughts?
Because it included in the planning care, I'm really, I think taking no action makes more sense as well. I think he was on his way to assessing balance. He could use more documentation, but I agree with statements that were already made.
Do you have a thought on that, Mr. Greer?
I'm inclined to take no action on this one.
Okay, I think I'll move that we take no action.
Second.
Any further discussion? I think we're ready, Judy.
In the matter against JK, it's been moved and seconded to take no action. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone? Sorry, Mr. Leone's absent. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, moving on to G. Hey, L.
What I would like to ask the board's permission to skip this particular one and come back to it. She informed Judy that she would be back on the call at 12. She had to attend to a meeting until that time.
Mindy, I'm on the call now. I was able to join.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Sorry about that. Okay.
That's all right.
All right. KL, on April 15th of 2023, KL was arrested for extreme DUI. Her BAC was recorded at 0.251 on 4/19 of 23. She did submit evidence that she reported her arrest and charges to the board via email on that date, 4/19, which was within the 10th regulatory requirement. She pled guilty and states that she has completed all court-ordered requirements since that time. On her license renewal for the 2024-26 period, she provided a narrative explanation and answered yes on the appropriate questions, and she provided a written statement and supporting documents for your consideration in this matter. It's for your review. And she did indicate she'd be willing to answer any questions or provide a statement.
Great. Thank you. Do you have a statement for us?
Yeah, I wrote some of it out too, but you know, for me this was a tremendous wake up call. It was awful. I was super embarrassed. And you know, I was just glad that no one was hurt, including myself, and that, you know, it finally sparked me to make huge changes in my life. It was a long time coming. I think it's really easy for a lot of professionals who struggle with substance abuse to hide in plain sight because, you know, we look like we have everything put together. And by all means, you know, by an outsider looking at my life, it did look like it was all together. But my life was slowly falling apart since probably my 20s. And, you know, this is what I needed, and it's sad to say that nothing else that came before it kind of prompted this, but this was enough to scare me into saying, oh my God, I need help. So I immediately threw myself into personal therapy, as well as I was ordered to go to court-ordered therapy, and I'm a veteran. the United States Army Reserves. So that affords me to go to Veterans Court, which was really beneficial because Veterans Court, which is unique to the city of Phoenix, it is really more about rehabilitating and making sure that you have all the resources in place to prevent this from happening again. So along with, you know, doing my own personal therapy and substance abuse therapy, I did participate in Veterans Court ordered therapy. And, you know, all the other stipulations that are part of a drunk DUI case, like going to the Mothers Against Drunk Driving panel, my night in jail, you know, all of those things. This has been an experience that has opened my eyes to so many aspects of our system. And, you know, I am just really grateful that things happened the way they did and that it, you know, that I was able to really get in and start making changes in my life. I really credit Alcoholics Anonymous for the big chunk of that work, as I immediately got involved with a group here in Phoenix, and, you know, got myself a sponsor. All the things that I had been told before, just never really felt compelled to do. Nothing like almost ruining your whole life to make you finally take the initiative. And, you know, I'm happy to say I am, I've been sober since the 20th of April, 23, and I have, you know, continued to be very active in the Alcoholics Anonymous program here. I complete service work with them. I take, panels of other professionals into hospitals and institutions to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I also now take sponsees through this process. I think it is unique that, you know, it's easy to go into a meeting and look around and say none of these people are like me. But at the end of the day, we all struggle with substance abuse and it's all very similar. So I'm just very grateful that this happened. And, you know, I apologize for having to have you all review this and have this on my record. It's embarrassing, but at the same time, I know now I am a better person for it. I'm a better, way better therapist for having gone through all of this and finally faced this demon. So I'm open to any questions anybody has.
Does anyone have any questions?
No. Thank you so much for your statement.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I feel like I'm inclined to take no action. It feels like she's doing absolutely everything she possibly can and is mm-hmm. now helping others, and she's taken charge of her life, and what a wonderful thing to see.
I agree. Second your motion.
Any further discussion?
It's been moved and seconded to take no action in the case of KL. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Oh, yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great.
Thank you, everyone.
Best of luck to you staying on the path you're on.
Thank you.
Then we will move on to RH.
This is RH, and he had informed me yesterday that he would not be able to attend secondary to his patient treatment caseload. He was arrested and charged on 10-15-24 on suspicion of DUI. He was transported to NCSO, which was the Cave Creek substation. Despite repeated attempts at trying to get the blood alcohol level, he states it's pending, but he was charged according to the documents he submitted with a blood alcohol of 0.08 or more, according to those documents. He did self-report the arrest to the board on 10-16-24, which does meet the regulatory requirement. According to his written statements, he's practiced as a physical therapist since 1992, but moved to Arizona in 2021. He received his Arizona PT license by universal recognition from New York State. He stated to me that this is his first arrest for DUI, and he has stopped drinking since the arrest, and he is currently working full-time in home care. He did provide you a written statement and supporting documents for your consideration, but he has indicated his next court date is not scheduled. This matters for your review.
Any thoughts?
My inclination is to take no action. It looks like this was a Tuesday. A Wednesday, which gives me a little more concern, but I'll move to take no action.
Second.
Yeah. Yeah, in home care, you can especially adjust your schedule. So he may not have worked Wednesday or Thursday and worked the weekend instead. I mean, that can certainly happen. So. Any further discussion?
It's been moved and seconded in the case of RH to take no action. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Okay, moving on to PP.
I don't believe she's on the call either. Let's just turn the chat. Oh, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Is it okay if I use your name?
Yeah.
This is Ms. Pino. She renewed her license for the 2024 renewal and answered yes to question 5, which was actually related to a previous malpractice judgment, and she included a letter from 2019 from her attorney. But this board had previously reviewed the matter in 2019, and it was a condition of her approval for her initial application at that time. So it's already been reviewed and adjudicated, et cetera. So really that was kind of the non-issue. But it should be noted that she did receive a non-disciplinary order from this board in 2020. It was case 1962. And then when she completed both her 2022 and 2024 renewals, she didn't even mention that. She didn't affirm it. She didn't indicate that she'd been under investigation. So that's related to question 3 on the renewals. And the question is, have you ever been under investigation, suspension, or restriction by a professional licensing board in any jurisdiction? That would be the subject of discipline under this chapter. So again, she answered no to that question on both the 22 and 2024 renewals when she just had an NDO in 2020. I talked to her. She provided a written statement as to why she didn't accurately complete her 2022 and 2024 renewal application. So it's for your review to determine as it relates to how she answered those renewal applications.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board, Ms. Pinto?
Pino, yes, thank you.
Does anyone have questions?
Ms. Pino, question. I think your statement was that you did not report the non-disciplinary board order on 2022 and 2024, but because it wasn't disciplined?
I thought I did report it on 2024. I thought I reported the both cases from the initial 2019 review, but I guess I misunderstood. But I thought I did report it on the 2024 one. And but initially in the previous renewal, I didn't intentionally omit it. I just misinterpreted the question as I had just sat before the Arizona board twice for my previous cases, and I thought that it was reviewed and was in my file, and that because there was no negligence on my part or there was a non-disciplinary action, that that it was deemed like not necessary, but the it was just a lack of clarity on my part, and that's the reason why I answered the way I did.
Dr. Castillo, my intention is to take no action in this case.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
I'll just draw your attention to page 9. It is the 2024 renewal, or she answered no to that question 3.
Okay, thanks. I was going to ask about that. Considering that it's been 2 renewals and she didn't report, my inclination would be to open a complaint with the eventual hope that the board would do an advisory letter, just reminding her of her responsibility to report these things each renewal, especially since had 2 interactions with the board in the past. So that would be my inclination.
Do you want to make a motion?
Well, Josh, did you make a motion?
I just stated an intention, but. Okay.
Yeah, I'll make a motion and then we can discuss. So I move that we open a complaint. Hear it again, of course, at a board meeting in the future.
I'll second. I think you make a good point about, you know, this is her second appearance, well, third appearance before the board. You know, she's not reporting previous issues, which is part of our disclosure.
I thought I submitted like a written response in those sections, and then I said you can contact me at any time, or provided my email address, phone number, and provided like a correspondence letter from my lawyer. I thought you did
for the 2019 as I mentioned before, the medical malpractice, you answered correctly, but as it related to the NDO, you answered no to question 3.
I thought like they were all part of under the same, like the those two were both reported. I think, I don't know what's going on. I thought I reported both of them.
So it looks like our paperwork was showing no.
Yeah, okay. For both the 2022 and 2024 renewals.
But did she provide a narrative? She did write yes on the malpractice. Is it the same disclosure?
So on the 2024 renewal, she indicated that there was a medical malpractice. She answered yes to that question, and she included the narrative. It was a letter from her attorney.
Okay.
That then, as I went back and researched it, the board at that time, back in 2019, reviewed it, said, okay, it was a condition of her initial application. They reviewed the medical malpractice details that Ms. Pino provided, and they issued her initial application. Or her initial license, sorry. So she answered yes to that. Now I did not see any additional narrative response other than the letter that she attached related to the MedMap. I saw nothing related to the NDO. That this board issued related to a 2019 issue, 2019 case.
I understand your position, Dr. King. I'm going to vote no on the motion. I think the lesson has been learned, and creating another know, black mark on the record just doesn't seem productive to me on this one. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just say I'm going to vote no.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm actually inclined to agree. I see the logic is wrong, but I do see the logic in what happened there. I am looking through to see if there's any kind of a narrative. I don't see any additional narrative, so I'm not sure what we're discussing there. But that would be my only kind of concern.
I'm in agreement of opening the case, even for the sake of an advisory letter. Responding twice in the same manner. What it was brought up earlier that if you're in doubt, you should call the board. And I think this is one of those cases where if you were in doubt, you should be calling the board to ask, how should I answer this question? And, you know, us in two cases identifying that answer, is not correct. So I agree.
I think that's a good point, Dr. Hike. Maybe that'll be something that she can pass on to others. When in doubt, call the board. Any further discussion? Okay.
So is the motion, does the motion include potential violations of 32-3208? Is that what you're citing?
I don't think it's 32-3208. Well, it could be. It could be 32-2044-3 as well.
Okay. All right. In the case against PP, it's been moved and seconded to open a case citing the potential violations of 32-3208 and 32-2044-03 as potential violations. Dr. Bastille.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
No.
Mr. Barton.
No.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay. The board will be in touch.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And then we'll move on to letter J, DK.
So DK emailed the board on October 4th stating that he had been arrested for DUI, but he was not charged and that his attorney was working to get the matter resolved. He stated that he had sent a notice to the board of this arrest several months prior, but we couldn't find any evidence of that, that he had in fact notified us within the 10-day regulatory requirement. After several attempts by board staff to obtain information from DK, he submitted a written statement and additional documents for the board to consider. The court documents reflect that DK was arrested on 12/31/23 and in fact was charged on 1/4/24 with four counts, which included DUI, possession of drug paraphernalia, possession of marijuana, refusal to submit to testing and an open container. The arrest occurred on the White River Indian Reservation, and I've been unable to obtain the BAC despite several requests from Dr. Kane, from DK to provide the result. His last court appearance was supposed to have been December 11th at the White Mountain Apache Tribal Court. He claimed in a previous communication that he was attempting to get the change to a Flagstaff court, but I don't know that that happened. He failed to provide any update on the outcome of that appearance, again, despite multiple requests and reminders by board staff. Upon further review, it was determined that when DK renewed his license for 2024, he answered no to question 9, have you been the subject of any criminal investigation by a federal, state, or local agency, or had criminal charges filed against you? He is currently working as a physical therapist at the White River Indian Hospital, and his employer is aware of his arrest and inquiry by board staff regarding the status of his case. So it's been difficult to get information out of DK. I don't believe that he's on the call today, and I couldn't get either way if he was planning to participate. So it's limited information that I have.
I move that we open a case.
Second.
Any further discussion?
And you would like me to cite ARS 32208, which is the mandatory reporting requirement of 10 days, and then ARS 3224.43, obtaining to or attempting to obtain a license by fraud or misrepresentation? Those two? Okay.
No further discussion. I think we're ready. Judy?
It's been moved and seconded to open a case against DK, citing the potential violations of ARS 32208 and
32204403.
Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Nice. Are we good on the recording, Judy?
Yeah, I think, you know what, let's do this next one, and then we can stop and restart the recording.
Okay, we'll move on to item number 11, old business, case 2327, Christopher Karps, PTA.
So you issued an interim consent agreement to restrict Mr. Karp's practice of physical therapy as a physical therapist assistant until he was medically safe to engage in the practice of physical therapy. The ICA was fully executed on April 14th of 2023 and was included as an attachment for your review. Multiple attempts to contact Mr. Karp's over the last month using the information of record were unsuccessful. He did not renew his PTA license for the 2024 renewal period, and so his current license status is listed as inactive, probation restricted. So we're bringing this matter back to you since it's been such a long time since we've addressed his interim consent agreement, and it's before you to determine your next steps.
Mr. Harris, just a question. If he has not renewed and is not currently licensed, do we have jurisdiction to do anything?
Mr. Barton, members of the board, no, other than to memorialize this. So in the future, should he ever reapply, this would be something that would, I suspect the board would want to address at that time.
Okay. And I would agree. I think that I would move that we memorialize that if he does, if this gentleman does reapply for a license, that he needs to come before the board, and we need to determine that he's medically safe to practice before that license is accepted. I don't know. Do we need to do anything specific, Judy or Mr. Harris, to ensure that that happens, or just tell you guys?
No, I don't want to misspeak, Judy, but I'm hoping that either, you know, the application itself, you would have to disclose this, or there's some way to for this to come to the staff's attention, Judy.
It should be both. It should be both that he's got this in his history. But one point of clarification, please, Mr. Harris. So in this circumstance, it's my understanding that he's under, because this matter occurred and he didn't renew his license, this leaves him still open for board action. But at that same point, if the board just chooses to kind of close out this circumstance, I'm trying to figure out how we address his status. Do we leave his status as the inactive, or do we allow it to eventually expire through non-renewal, which is what it will do.
Right. And maybe I'm because this is an interim.
Yes, we have an interim right now.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was focusing on the fact that it was a consent agreement. Because it's an interim, you have to take dispositive action on the complaint. Because he didn't renew, his license is deemed suspended by operation of law. So right now, his licensure is in suspended status. Thanks for that clarification, Judy. And the board will have to, either move this forward to formal hearing, or, as Mr. Barton, was thinking based upon my previous thoughts, you could just close the case and memorialize everything that has happened. But because, it's an open case, his license will remain suspended until you take dispositive action with the underlying complaint.
Okay. So we do have to take some kind of action either to.
Yes.
And they could do that. Okay. Move to a formal hearing to do that, Mr. Harris?
Yes. And I would suggest that, and I don't want to misspeak, and certainly, Mindy and Judy can correct me. But I believe that is something that you've done in the past that would be consistent with these cases, that they just can't simply choose to not renew and let, this kind of go away through the expired process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
And Judy, is he reported in the NPDB? He can't just move to another place and a license, he's never had a license before, can he?
No, I don't believe so. So let me double check. The circumstances of an ICA help dictate whether it's reported to the NPDB or not. So if you'll bear with me just a moment. I think his was.
Yeah, I think it would be too, Judy.
But let me just verify that.
Okay.
Oh, darn. Okay. Well, the FSBPT site is down, so I do have one other way I can double check this.
And we can also verify if it isn't. We certainly can.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the point of the NPDB, right, is to have cross-jurisdictional communication about practitioners. Yeah, and patient public safety.
And I'm, this is not working and I don't know why. Yes, it was. It was reported.
Okay, thank you.
And yes, we've had inquiries from another license that he held in Wisconsin as well. So it was all based on that information. So yes, this was reported.
Yeah, Ms. Chapius is on top of things, members of the board.
Yes, she is.
She tries. Yeah. I won't guarantee it, but she tries.
So, Madam President, are you thinking moving to a formal, what are your thoughts? What do you want to
do? Yeah, I feel like we should move to a formal hearing and bring this case to a close. Mm-hmm.
I agree. And to the extent that I have a motion pending, I withdraw it so that we can move to a somebody else can move that we advance to a formal hearing. So.
I'll move this case to a formal hearing.
Second.
Who seconded that?
Any.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And this would be for revocation of license.
Mm-hmm.
For, licensing, because it would be licensed now.
Any further discussion? Okay.
Mr. Harris, should the motion state remand to formal hearing for purposes of possible revocation, or should it just remand to formal hearing?
Remand to formal hearing, Judy. Thanks.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to remand case 2327, Christopher Karps, to formal hearing. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
And Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. Okay, it is 12:18 at this point. I'd like to stop the recording and restart. Would you like to take a break in addition to that stop and restart?
Do people need a break?
Let's just plow through. We're almost done.
Yeah.
All right. It's 12:18. Let me stop the recording. Bear with me a moment.